Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on April the 16th, 2015, in the evening. The Orioles have started off the season 5-4, and we are coming up on a, I don't want to say crucial, but we're coming up on a four-game weekend series against the Boston Red Sox that will... Since the Red Sox are first in the division, if the Orioles can win it, they might find their way to the top. Anyway, I'm joined once again by Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty good tonight, Mark. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty well. The big news in baseball, it's obviously huge news in Birdland. The Cubs are surprisingly going to call up Chris Bryant the very day they can do so while getting their seventh year of service time out of him.
He just needed that extra bit of seasoning, you know?
Yeah, he just needed his 8 games of AAA to really be big league ready.
In which he worked on his outfield defense by never playing the outfield.
I believe he had bad stats in those. Not that 8 games of AAA or 7 games or whatever matters, but, you know. Thankfully, the Orioles did not have any player to screw around with of that sort this year. Although, in fact, we're getting the seventh year out of Matt Weider since they waited to call him up all the way back in 2009. But
That's true.
That's ancient history now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every team plays the service time games, but it's just so blatantly obvious with the Cubs that it seems sort of offensive.
I always think, and I just remember when the Orioles had to call up Zach Britton, like, right at the beginning of April, because that was, what was that, 2011, and Brian Mattis had his intercostal thing.
Yeah.
And it was this whole agony of, oh my god, what if they don't get the seventh year of Zach Britton? And then it didn't matter, because he wasn't good for a while, and they had to demote him to the minors like 9 different times, so.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of ifs in worrying about that. Sometimes they don't stick in the big leagues for good. Now, Chris Bryant, if he's as good as they say, I suppose he'll be sticking, so whatever.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, like you said, it's so hard to know right now if, you know, if the Cubs are trying to compete this year, they should bring him up, I guess, as soon as possible, which is what they did. But, you know, because you never know what a guy's actually going to do at the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, they went 5-3 without him, so... You know, if the reason they don't make the postseason or whatever is because they didn't go 6-2 instead of 5-3 because they didn't have Chris Bryant on the roster, I mean, I don't know. That's stretching it. And I have a feeling when we get down to September, we will find they're either decisively in or decisively out. So who cares? Anyway, let's get on with the Orioles. It's been a good first week for the Orioles. Could have been better, but it turns out, if the Orioles were to go 5-4 over every stretch of 9 games from here for the rest of the season, they would end up at 90-72. It's a pretty good year.
Pretty good.
So, I mean, that's a modest beginning, but if you pile up that rate, it's going to end up well.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, they always do the last 10 game stat, like the standings. I always say if you can just be 6-4 every 10 games, you end up with 96 wins, you know. And if you think it's just when you have 162 games, all you have to do is just be consistent. You don't have to be great for stretches or anything like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, 90 wins last year would have still won the AL East by 6 games.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's going to win the AL East by 6 games this year. But, it's a respectable record. Hopefully it would be a postseason record.
I think it probably would.
Even if it hadn't won the AL East last year, 90 wins, that would have put, even if we're supposing there was a higher win team in the AL East, 90 would have still had them hosting the wild card game.
Yeah, so.
And I believe it have had Oakland in Baltimore, and the Royals would, oh no, I'm sorry, it would have had the Royals in Baltimore, so that would have just, I'm not going to talk about that. Let's pretend that didn't happen. I don't want to think about them.
I try every day to forget.
I did their 7-2 start where their bullpen is like the opposite of the Orioles in that they've not allowed a bullpen run yet or something.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, those guys are not regressing early on.
They are not, much to my chagrin. 19 and third innings out of their bullpen, no runs, no earned runs.
Well, the Orioles' first week has felt a little worse than it actually ended up being because of some of the losses, I think. Just some of the bullpen
That's
losses
true.
and
The first Yankees game was very bad bullpen.
yeah, that was I couldn't really handle it.
Yeah, I could have dealt without that. Now, I've hating it less since they went on to win the next two games.
Yeah. But a pinch hit grand slam from Stephen Drew
Steven
is.
Drew, for crying out loud. I really felt like in that series the Orioles pitchers did not get the memo over which Yankees hitters are bad.
Yeah.
Like you
Stephen
had
Drew hit
Carlos
like sub two.
Beltran was hitting the ball everywhere, and he's like supposed to be freaking old and toast.
Yeah, but he was ripping doubles all over the place.
A-Rod hit a homer about 9 miles. What did that land on the landed on the concrete walkway between
Yeah,
the
in
back
between
of
like,
the outfield sections and the elevated ones a little bit?
I don't see many home runs hit there.
That's a long way. I didn't catch the distance on that one, but that's a long way.
That was an absolute bomb. But yeah, obviously they won the Yankees series, won the Rays series, they lost the Blue Jays series, but you're gonna lose series here and there. Those games, obviously opening day was very frustrating and awful as well, so that kind of soured the weekend for me.
Yeah, it would have been better if they could have had the better game on the opener, I think. Just get all everybody's there with all the good feelings, and they run out on the orange carpet, and we get the super amazing rendition of the Star Spangled Banner,
And Bud Norris gives up 8 runs.
and then Bud Norris has the rockets glaring as actually the fly balls launching.
Yeah. I was actually at the game Saturday, Jimenez's start, which was a good one to be at for that series.
Would not have predicted that it would be Ubaldo who would have the best first
No.
start.
By far. Not even really close.
It was almost like he was a different guy.
I wrote about it on Monday, but he was dominant. He was masterful. That was a great game.
And the
It was really.
Toronto lineup is not going to be a bad lineup when all is said and done, I don't think. So it wasn't like he was
No.
taking some bad team and just destroyed them.
Yeah, I even thought that was a bad game for him because that's a patient lineup that doesn't strike out a lot. And he only walked one and gave up one hit. That's crazy. That's domination.
7 innings, 2 base runners. Well, maybe there was an error in there, I don't remember, but yeah.
No, I don't think so.
That's
Or I
pretty
think the
good.
error was in the ninth against Britain, maybe. I'm not sure. But yeah, 2 base runners, 8 strikeouts. I don't know if you're familiar with game score.
I am familiar with it.
Yeah. So I guess for those who don't know, it's sort of like is a Bill James innovation in which he sort of gives you points for innings pitched and strikeouts and deducts points for how many hits and stuff you get. And so Jimenez had an 82 of a game score, which I th think is like way above average. I'm trying to think of what the average game score is, but he was great. There's nothing else to say. He was everything he wasn't last year.
Of course, we'll be finding out if he can continue that because he's starting the first game of the Red Sox series, which will be later on in the evening as you are all listening to this. We'll get the matchup of Ubaldo Jimenez and Joe Kelly in Fenway Park. I guess at least he's not pitching in the 11:05 a.m. one. I'm sure that would throw him out of his routine. Why do we have to get that game again?
I don't know. Only in Boston would you get 4 games and 4 different start times.
It's really weird. Like, I get that's their tradition, but why did it have to be Baltimore as the team
Just
that's there?
is it 3 years running now?
I don't remember that they were there 3 years ago or
I
two.
don't remember either, but I mean,
I know they were there last year, and then there was the whole added it was the year after the marathon bombing stuff.
yeah.
But yeah, there's three games, and they're 7:10, 4:05, 1:35, and
11:05.
11:05 a.m.
Ridiculous. But I know, I remember, I think I remember, because last year was kind of the same thing. It was like three games, three different start times, or four games, four different start times. And I remember Buck being pretty mad about it because it's, early in the season, all these games are starting at crazy different times. And it's like, it's hard for guys to get in that routine.
Well, I guess we'll chalk this one up as another one in the column of MLB conspiracy theories against the Orioles, since the Orioles are, well, since Masson is suing MLB over the whole rights fee business.
That's just what we need. We need another one of those.
Yeah, that's another one coming in there. That's maybe what's going on. Now, I have no idea. That.
It's just, I'm sure that Saturday game is probably a Fox game, which is why it's at four.
And then, speaking of Red Sox scheduling shenanigans, the Orioles play four against the Red Sox, and then there's a three-game series, and then another three-game series against the Red Sox in Camden next weekend.
Yeah.
And I believe I heard them say on Masson that's going to be the only weekend series against the Red Sox at home this year.
Yeah, there's another conspiracy
Yeah,
for
they're
you,
not
trying
even
to keep
letting
that
them like
money.
soak in the summer series where all the Boston people can like come up from Northern Virginia, the quote unquote Boston people can come
Yeah.
up from Northern Virginia or whatever,
Take that money out of
switch
PD
out of their
fans.
Walgreens hats for like 2 days and wear Red Sox hats. I don't know. I don't know how that works, but that's what I imagine in my head.
You're probably not wrong.
Whether they ever lived in New England at all is, although they're certainly never lacking for fans with the bad Boston accent,
No,
when the Red Sox are in town, but I just have a feeling it's a good bit of bandwagon.
I met a Red Sox fan from Hawaii. She told me she was a Red Sox fan because of her uncle or something like that. I just got mad and left. Never forget that though. Hawaii.
That's pretty random.
Just, she was a Red Sox and Packers fan.
All right.
I guess if you're in Hawaii, you could just pick the good teams, but it
Maybe
still
if
made
you're
her mad.
Hawaiian, you can just follow whatever team Shane Victorino's on. I
That's
don't know.
probably not a bad idea.
I feel like if I was from some obscure place that had no baseball team, I would just, if there was like a pro player from there, I would just follow them around and not even root for one team.
Well, I mean, that's, Chen always gets the people with the Taiwanese flag in the stands for every one of his
He
starts.
has his own little media contingent too. It's not
Yeah.
as big as like the Japanese contingent for like a Tanaka or a Ichiro or something, but there's definitely at least a few Taiwanese reporters that are just there for Chen.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy, but I guess he's a minor celebrity.
Periodically, I get to sit in the press box and just watch the game from their stuff, and whenever it's there for a Chen game, it's like all the Asian reporters are just like on the other end of the press box from me, and they all just sit together, and I don't know that anybody talks to them. I feel kind of weird about it, but I guess that's the way everybody likes it. I mean, obviously I'm not a regular in there, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, you always see them with the Taiwanese flags and everything, and our photo editor,
Yeah.
that's like there's so many pictures of just fans whenever he starts. There's just, and it's not like the same ones, I'm pretty sure. It's just
Yeah, I don't think it is.
always a few people that are just they're there
See,
because Chen's a big deal.
you even see him on road games.
He's the GQ cover guy over there. He had one over the off season, I think. He was on the Taiwanese GQ cover. Kind of a big
Yeah.
deal.
Yeah. He looked decent in his second start, better than the first, but he was still, I guess he was the one that gave up the home run to A-Rod, right?
I believe he was.
Yeah.
Could do
So,
without that. Although we
yeah.
are at least getting closer to the collision course between the Yankees and A-Rod, which will maybe be entertaining over whether they're going to pay the $6 million bonuses.
I like how A-Rod has sort of become like the anti-hero for people because the Yankees keep trying to screw him out of money. It's It's like, you signed that contract and knew what he was. You can't just try to get out of it now.
I think it's fair to say that A-Rod has become a heel that people root for.
Yeah.
Some people are rooting for him on like the baseball Twitter sphere. And I mean,
yeah.
if he was not in the AL East, I imagine I would also be in that category.
Yeah.
But since
I mean,
the Yankees are a direct competitor of the Orioles, I would like for there to be maximum A-Rod badness and drama.
Yeah, I mean, if he could be great and everyone else be bad and they lose a lot of games, I think I would root for that more than anything.
That would be interesting if their only good player was the 39-year-old or whatever. That would be pretty glorious. I don't know if we'll be so fortunate to get that.
So we've covered the Cubs and
let's get on with the Orioles. So here's what we wanted to talk about with the Orioles. After nine games, some stuff we're really worried about. We kind of talked about the bullpen already. I believe they've allowed a run in every game so far. Pretty big difference from last year, where they were, well, you know, they were one of the best bullpens in the league. And this year, not so much. So far. It's
so
early.
Far. Yeah, you know, some of them started to look a little better. Brock looked pretty good last night. Mattis has looked decent since his first appearance. But, you know, it's just, it's frustrating. It's a frustrating way to lose when your starters and your offense gives you enough, but the bullpen blows it in the end. And, you know, and the one guy that's, you know, continually looked bad is Tommy Hunter, who obviously he gave up that grand slam. And, you know, he's just, and last night he was bad. He made it it was a 7-3 easy lead. Britton's probably not going to come in. And then 7-5. And
Tommy
now you got to start
boom.
Biting your fingernails. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Although he
still got the stuff,
he really had some bad batted ball luck in the Wednesday night game.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I would agree. And like you said, it's so early that stuff can really affect your line and your stats. But I wouldn't say he's got particularly great control either. He's probably walked too many guys and, you know, he's getting too many bad counts and leaving fastballs up, and that's how you get hurt.
The professional hitters will be ready when you're in the 2-0 counts or the 3-1 counts.
Yes.
They know what's coming.
Yeah.
They're ready
to
spring.
And, you know, I guess the other guy who's struggled a bit is Kevin Gausman in the bullpen, which, again, he seemed to have a little bit of bad luck, too. But otherwise, I think all of them have looked okay enough to sort of skate by so far.
Yeah, for anybody who's hoping Gausman is just so good out of the bullpen, they have to put him in the rotation. That definitely hasn't happened. I mean, he's pitched in three games, so whatever. But
yeah. There's an interesting – Jonah Carey had written about Gausman, I think, yesterday. And he had a little interesting tidbit at the end of his post about there's rumblings that the Orioles are basically starting their five guys to showcase them for a trade so they can move Gausman in eventually. I don't know how much you want to put anything into rumors or not, but interesting.
Yeah,
makes
well, we
sense.
Certainly haven't heard any of those rumblings from the Orioles beat reporter crew, but that doesn't mean they're not happening because the number of news stories that group breaks collectively is not high.
It is not. Dan Connolly does a decent job, but most of the big Orioles stories are broken by national guys.
Because it's usually like the agents who are in tight with the national writers, and the agents like know everything.
True. And, you know, Jonah Carey actually, I think he broke the Ryan Webb signing, if I remember that correctly, from a couple years back. Because he's not really a guy that breaks a lot of news. But I know he always gets good interviews with Dan Duquette and stuff, so I think he's relatively tied into the organization.
Well, who would you want to see traded out of the starters if anybody was getting traded?
I don't know. Probably someone with only a year left, right? I mean,
I guess everybody out there is probably like, oh, trade Ebola. Well, that's not happening. It's just not reality.
Yeah.
Let's forget about that one right there. We're probably talking, really, it would be like a Chen, Norris, or Gonzalez is probably your trio of possible trade guys. Because
yeah.
I think Tillman is sticking around. And Jimenez obviously has this year and two more on his contract.
If they weren't going to eat the $3 million on the Ryan Webb deal, then they're not going to eat Jimenez's
Yeah,
contract.
they're not going to eat the 50 million.
No. I mean, yeah. So I mean, I think I feel like they'd like to keep a lefty in the rotation. So I mean, really, you're looking at Norris and Gonzalez, and with only the year left on Norris, I could see them sort of just trading him for a reliever with some options or something like that.
Of course, Norris
Probably
would
can't trade
actually
him
need to
much.
pitch well enough to be worth something to somebody, because two starts into the season, when you're sitting on a 12.38 ERA, not that encouraging. I mean, obviously,
No.
it's two starts. And of course, we've got this small sample size caveat that will continue
Continue to have until Memorial Day.
pretty much. So, yes, the numbers are relatively meaningless, but they're the only numbers we have to talk about. So we're going to talk about them, by Joe.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's probably more likely that they don't trade anyone and someone gets injured and Gausman steps in. I mean,
Much more likely injury or ineffectiveness would necessitate some
yeah.
shuffling than a
So,
trade.
yeah. Not, yeah. It wouldn't, that would, I would be surprised if they made a trade. It was an interesting thing at the end of his article about Gausman that there had been some rumblings about it, but I don't know. Right now, I mean, you probably got to go a couple more times to the rotation to actually find out if ineffectiveness is going to kick someone out or not.
By the way, Jonah Carey, for those who don't know, writes on Grantland.com these days, and I actually really enjoy their baseball content. Ben Lindbergh is another great writer
Yeah.
over there. He does some baseball analysis, and even when they're not writing about the Orioles, it's usually very interesting.
Yes, it is. They're a good site. It's a good website
When you
for
get
all sports.
them actually talking about sports that interest you, it's interesting. Of course, as I bring up Grantland.com right now, the first article is an oral history of Shaq, Penny, and the Orlando Magic's lost NBA dynasty, which, let me tell you how much I am enthused about that. No, not really. But obviously the founder of Grantland is Bill Simmons, who is like ultimate lover of the NBA in the world.
Yeah.
So, there's going to be that on there. There is interesting baseball and pop culture, and some of their football, if you're into that writing, is pretty interesting. So maybe
I'd give him a good recommendation. Ben Lindbergh and Jonah Carey are two of the smarter guys out there writing about baseball on the national stage.
this brief segue is an uncompensated endorsement. We're just talking about it because we like it.
Although I would take
I would
compensation.
certainly take compensation if you're out there listening, Grantland. Absolutely. I ain't got no shame. So, okay. On the vague subject of Orioles who haven't looked good early on, we will pop from Bud Norris to a hitter by the name of Chris Davis.
Yes.
Because here's the thing about Chris Davis. He is not looking good at all.
No.
And he has struck out, I believe, 15 times in 33 plate appearances.
That sounds right.
That's really bad.
That's about a 45% rate.
And he has no walks at all.
None.
The only reason he has an on-base percentage higher than his batting average is he has been hit by a pitch twice.
Which, I mean, we can't literally cannot say it enough that it's early, small sample size, but after last year, the first thing you see of him is this. And the strikeouts, sure, he had a lot of strikeouts. That's bad. But the lack of walks combined with striking out that much, I mean, it's atrocious.
Not a good combination. Lack of walk, striking out that much, and a low batting average.
Yeah, I mean, really, he's not doing anything particularly well last night. I mean, he had two big hits and three RBIs last night, which, that's good, and it's just. You'd like to see something better from him. I mean, he was Monday's game, he was 0 for 4 with four strikeouts.
Get the golden sombrero in there.
I think all four were swinging strikeouts too, which that's pretty special. So he just doesn't appear to see the ball really all that well. I know Jim Palmer was saying his swing looked all messed up too, but He did it. He hit a nice opposite field home run against the Blue Jays. He had that opposite field double last night. So, I mean, the signs of some good are there, but mostly bad so far, which is frightening because he would be one of the more important parts of the Orioles being a good team this season.
Yeah, and if he is not doing well, I don't know that they're going to be able to do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean,
Because unless there's another injury, or unless Dan Duquette gets his jackhammer out again,
pop
they're pretty much
machine.
stuck playing him because he's making $12 million, and they can't just release the guy who hit 53 home runs 2 seasons
Yeah.
ago.
I mean, you can try to hide him, like platoon him, but right now I think you got to see what you can get out of him. He's still got talent. You just got to hope that, early season jitters and long layoff
Right,
and
you're talking, well, maybe his timing's not all the way back from his suspension, although he had a full spring training.
yeah. And he looked good in spring
He
training.
did. He looked all right.
But spring training is not the regular
Yeah, the
season.
lights are on. Now it's real pitchers and not, whatever double A filler might be throwing most of the innings in spring training.
Yeah, so his strikeout and his walks are definitely something to monitor going forward, which is really all you can say right now about anybody's stats. You can see and look at what's concerning you right now or what's exciting you right now and just say, pay attention to it, look at the games, watch them, see how they're looking, see if these things become a bigger trend.
Because what do they say? The strikeout and walk rate stats are the ones that tend to, quote unquote, stabilize the
Yes.
fastest. So if there's
Yeah.
anything you can start to project with confidence, it would be those.
Yeah. So for hitters, the strikeout rate stabilizes around 60 plate appearances. And then the walk rate, I think, is like 100 or 120. And then pitchers, it's like 70 plate appearances for strikeout rate or batters faced, and like 140 for walk rate. So those are the ones you kind of want to, that I like to watch early because they're statistically speaking more meaningful for earlier in the season than they are than a lot of other statistics are.
Also, Adam Jones is on pace to hit 72 home runs. So obviously that's normalized and standardized and stabilized. And
Exactly. That's
just put it in
perfectly
the
stable.
book. He's setting the home run record this year.
Pretty crazy. Or 72 wouldn't be it though, right?
Yeah, you're right. It was 73, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's on pace for 72 and that wouldn't be the record.
Then he would have the quote-unquote real home run
Oh
record.
yeah. It would be super real.
No, I don't buy into that. Bonds, whatever he was on or not on, Bonds is the champion, and that's that.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I'm right there with you.
I
I loved
mean,
watching Barry
and
Bonds.
obviously it's not an excuse, but just you could jam me up and you, Alex, with any and every steroid and the cream and the clear and stanozolol and anything else, all the Adderall, all the greenies, and I mean, I wouldn't hit one home run.
No. Nope. And that's, yeah, that's what made him great. And he was just a great baseball player, and he probably took steroids, but he was still a great baseball player.
Orioles fans love to boo the recent steroid visitor Alex Rodriguez, and there was some people on Twitter were like, "Well, if you boo A-Rod, you would have had to boo Cruz last year." I don't know about that. I mean, you can boo A-Rod because he's A-Rod. Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, A-Rod was getting booed before any of this stuff.
There was that one dude who was all standing up and turning around and wouldn't watch when A-Rod was batting. This was at Camden Yards, mind you, and some
Yeah.
dude tweeted about it, and then random internet schmuck started writing about it. I was like, dude, can we does this slow of a news day, like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some real news.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. A-Rod's been booed at Camden Yards and everywhere else he's been for the past 5 years. This isn't a new phenomenon.
Other Orioles home run paces, Jonathan Scope has 3 home runs through 9 games, so he's obviously on pace for a great year of home runs as well.
Yeah. He's looked good. He's looked good so far at the plate. He still strikes out a good amount and it probably isn't never going to walk a lot, but he seems to be barreling up the ball a little bit more. I know his line drive rate so far is pretty high, but again, that's one of those statistics that can fluctuate easily, and even over larger samples. So again, that's just, like I said, something to watch out for.
Scope
To
actually
see if.
has the second best OPS on the team right now. And again, and it won't be the last time you hear me say it, take a drink every time I do or whatever. No, don't drink if you're driving. That would be bad. Drink responsibly, as Gary Thorne would tell us. They haven't given him that promo in a couple years now. I really miss it, actually.
Yeah, it was always a good one. But yeah, I mean, that home run he hit last night was very far.
That wasn't quite as far as the A-Rod one, but it was a long way.
Yeah, that was a bomb. So, and extra base hits are one of those things that you like to look at too, because people that are bad at baseball don't tend to get extra base hits. It's just kind of one of those things. If you think about it, like you were saying with me and you, like, I'm never going to hit a double in the major leagues. So
I don't know
if
that I
someone
could run to
does, it
second
tells you a
base
little bit.
without dying. Certainly
Yeah.
not to third. You got Caleb Joseph getting triples up in here on Tuesday night.
True. That was funny. That was funny. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you have to be pretty good. You have to have a pretty high true talent level to hit doubles and home
Just to hit a
runs.
ball well enough that you get, you split the outfielder as it rolls to the wall and you cruise into second base. Like, it's hard. It is hard.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do. So, stuff like that. And Scope was just one of the guys I noticed that he's been much better here at the plate so far this year, but it can all change.
Yeah, I mean he could go like 0 for his next 12 with 9 strikeouts, and then in another week we'd be like, ah,
Yeah.
remember that
So
hot start?
I had a post all Saturday, or yes, I think Friday night, I had a post all lined up for my Monday deadline. And then over the course of the next two games, the entire post was just destroyed. The whole post idea was just annihilated. So I had to just scrape together that Ubaldo one really quick Sunday night. Was going to talk about the pitches per plate appearance of the new Orioles acquisitions, and they went from like 5 to 3 in two games.
Ay, ay, ay. Reality is a cruel,
Yeah.
cruel thing.
Other guys that have, I mean, obviously Adam Jones has looked fantastic.
Jones has only struck out 2 times in
Yeah.
37 plate appearances.
Like we were talking about that before we were recording, but I mean that's really interesting to me because Jones has gotten better every year he's been in the major leagues, basically. And if he can reduce his strikeout rate, even his career strikeout rate's around like 18% right now. This year it's 5, or it's like around 19%. Right now it's like 5%. But if he could even take it down to like 15% for a season, I mean, he's going to have a much higher batting average because that just means he's making more contact. And the one thing about Adam Jones, when he's making more contact, it's strong contact. Those are falling for hits.
Yeah, as long as it's good contact, but Jones historically has a good contact rate and makes good contact when he does.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, if he can, and right now his Z contact percentage, which is his contact rate on pitches inside of the zone, which is a good proxy just to see if a guy is sort of, he's swinging at pitches, he's able to get his bat to the ball, and he's swinging at good pitches because they're inside the zone, so theoretically they're easier to hit. And he's got a career percentage at 84%, which is a pretty good Z contact rate, but this year it's 96%, which is insane. And his contact rate's up overall, like 5% over his career average. And that's just, if he can maintain anything like that over the course of a season, he could be a statistically much better hitter this year.
And I mean, even if he just improves a little bit, that's,
Yeah.
he's already a very good player, and if he's improving on what he had already done, it's like if you look at his Fangraphs wins above replacement, which obviously isn't the be all and end all, but it's very interesting. His first 2 years in an Orioles uniform, 1.5 WAR. Next 2 years, 2.4 WAR. And this is 2008 through 2011 here. The next 2 years, 2012 and 13, you had 4.3 WAR and 4.2 WAR. So again, pretty much the same. Last year, 5.5.
Yeah.
So if he follows that pattern and he has another mid 5 to 6 WAR season, I mean, that's really good. Like,
that's really
there's
good.
Not many of those players in baseball that are 6
no,
WAR players.
Not at all. And, you know, yeah, he's very good. I mean, you can see on the Fangraphs page, they sort of update their projections as the games go along. And, I mean, his Zips projection's already up to him batting 290 this year, having probably his best offensive season after the first week. So they like his first week numbers.
Oh, and, yeah, you're absolutely right. His career best is a 287. So if he batted 290, that'd be a new best for him.
Yeah. And I mean, not even that. I mean, it's like OPS plus, WRC plus, all is right now projected, obviously. And I don't put a ton of weight in projection systems myself, but I always just find them interesting to look at.
They are something to talk about and occasionally argue about, occasionally ad nauseum.
Yes.
Especially when it's the off season and there's literally nothing else to talk about. But thankfully, we have real baseball games. Real games
True.
Are happening now, and we can talk about them.
So,
real,
yeah.
real
I think
players
that's something,
doing new things.
Something to pay attention to over the course of the next. Because, like we were talking, strikeout rate. I mean, Jones has 37 plate appearances. He doesn't. I mean, that's 2/3 of the way to a 60 plate appearances, which is right around the stabilization point. Which, I mean, that doesn't mean that his strikeout rate's going to stay at 5% if he reaches 60 plate appearances at 5%, but that means that it's likely not to regress crazily, you know? I think the rule of thumb is like 50% regression to the mean, so, you know.
So what, would it go from halfway between 5 and 18?
Basically, I think it's like a crude way of, an easy way to sort of think of it.
So what does that get us? 11.5%?
Which would be nuts. I mean, that would cut off almost 8% of his strikeout rate, which, I mean, he could hit for a very high average if he did that.
Last year, he struck out 24 times in April, March.
Yeah.
24 times in 103 plate appearances.
Yeah, so.
And he only had one home run at the end of April last year.
Yeah.
So that's a big improvement from, as Joe Angel likes to call him, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, he's got 7 singles and 6 extra base hits, too. Like I was saying, you know, extra base hits are another one of those things you want to pay attention to. And he's just been great. I mean, I think I saw from the article on him posted this morning on Camden Chat, he's at whatever accounted for. He's either batted in or scored 53% of the Orioles' runs so far this year. Something like that.
That's actually crazy. Yeah, he's driven in 11 and he scored 10. So 4 of those runs would have been his own home runs. But so that means he was on base and someone else drove him in 6 times.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's been good. He's been very good. And just see if it can continue. But just for all you Orioles fans out there, see if he starts striking out more and more. You can disregard everything we're saying, but
here's what
now.
We can hope for, Alex. We can hope that by the time that happens, everyone forgot what they heard on Camden Cast, and it doesn't matter.
I think that's more likely than anything.
Realistically, this record will be here, and someone could pick over it 3 years in the future, and we could look stupid for any number of reasons, but
true.
We'll just count on most people aren't going to be that dedicated.
Yeah. Also, I guess on the good side for the Orioles and strikeout rate, I know Zach Britton, although it's even a smaller sample size for him, but he has been striking out a lot of people, which, I mean, if he can up his strikeout rate and still get 75-80% ground balls, you're talking about a even more dominant closer
that
than he was
last year.
That
would be a top-flight relief pitcher, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best.
So, and of course, our standard is small sample size, but he's at an 83.3% ground ball rate so far.
Yeah.
And he has struck out 8 batters in 5 1/3 innings.
Yeah, so that's like, I think he's like around 40% for a strikeout rate.
Yep.
He's striking out people 47% of the time, and then out of all the balls that people actually put into play, 83% of them are on the ground. That's a great pitcher,
That's
but
crazy, and when you have Scope and Machado in your infield and whatever, it's shortstop, I don't know. Flaherty and Cabrera aren't bad, but they're not JJ Hardy either. But
no.
JJ Hardy will be back eventually. He's I think the original hope was they would start him on a rehab assignment Friday here, the 17th, but on Thursday they said he wasn't going to start it quite yet. I guess his taken batting practice at Camden Yards on Wednesday took him a little more out of whack than they wanted.
Yeah. I mean, I think for someone especially like Hardy, who's getting up there in age for in baseball years, making sure he's 100% healthy before you try to put him back in is probably the best way to go.
Yeah, we don't want him at 90% and hurting himself again and having to go on the disabled list again.
No. No, once he's back, you want him to be back until, unless something else goes horribly wrong, which would stink,
Well,
but
we don't want any more things going horribly wrong, but yeah. One other guy working his way back who I have a feeling is maybe a bit less significant for the fortunes of this season. Jimmy Paredes will be starting his rehab on Friday. And Alex, as you pointed out before we were recording, at pretty much every opportunity, Rock Kubatko from Masson observes that Paredes can go on rehab for up to 20 days, which
yeah,
probably
which to
means
me,
he's going to go on rehab for 20 days.
yeah. When Rock says stuff like that, I tend to pay attention. I mean, someone's basically telling him, yeah, he's gonna be on a rehab for 20 days, unless, if Delmon Young breaks his leg, then he'll come up. But probably after 20 days, you can say goodbye to the Jimmy Paredes era.
I mean, the Orioles pulled that move last year. It was with Nolan Reimold, and they gave
Yeah.
him the full-length rehab. And then when his rehab was over, they still just decided they would wait another 2 days to do something with them, just because they could get away with it, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 36 hours after the deadline of when they were supposed to do something with him that they actually did, and they ended up just activating him and instantly DFAing him. Which I have a feeling that fate is what awaits Paredes.
Most likely that's the fate he deserves.
Yeah,
I don't think
sorry to
he's got
any
a really.
Paredes family members who may have tuned into this particular episode of this podcast, but there's just
Yeah,
no room
well.
for a Jimmy Paredes on the Orioles right now, unless there's an injury.
No, and I mean, I think he'll get claimed if he's DFA'd and, he'll stick on someone else's 25 or 40-man roster or
Yeah, some
whatever.
bad team out there could use him, or even maybe a good team needs a righty bat off the bench, and they'll be like, ah, you know what? Jimmy Paredes, he's making the major league minimum. We'll take him.
Yeah. And it's not too bad of a life making the major league minimum.
That's better than riding the minor league bus,
Yeah.
for sure.
Definitely. So I won't shed a tear for him.
We would shed a tear for Matt Wieters if he does not end up making it back. Obviously, he's not going to get activated and DFA'd, but it's kind of a mystery what's going on with him.
It's the news is trickles out slowly. And it's not really news when it does. So, I mean, I guess it's going to be coming up. I guess when he had this, I know he was went out in like mid-May and they waited a while to have the surgery.
Yeah, they didn't get the surgery till June sometime. It might even have been June the 1st or so.
Okay, so we're getting around to like 10 and a half months from the surgery. So, I mean, if you look at it like that timeline, it's not totally ridiculous that he's out, but I would like some more positive
I
updates.
mean, if you think about it, when he first got the surgery, it was this optimistic thing like, oh, well, this way he'll definitely be ready for spring training and definitely be ready for opening day next year. And the reality is not quite that.
No, not at all.
Which, you know, I mean, I've never had my elbow operated on, and I don't need to recover to be in MLB games, so I don't know what is normal. Catcher Tommy John is pretty unusual as it is. We kind of heard it was supposed to be less time for position players for whatever
Yeah, they
reason.
kind of tell you like 8 to 10 or 9 months or whatever, but it seems like it's one of those things where it's just the guy, so based on the guy.
I mean, they took the, what did they take the ligament from the bottom of your foot? Is that what the Tommy John is?
I think it is, or it's like your
It's
hamstring.
they were
There's like some
yeah.
extra ligament in your
They
hamstring.
move a ligament from elsewhere in your body and just graft it onto your elbow.
Don't they just like tie it? They just like tie it
I
around.
don't know. I don't know exactly, but that's my general understanding of the process there. So
It's something
it gives
like
me the
that.
heebie-jeebies a little bit just imagining it.
It's weird to me that you can just like take parts of your body and move them around,
Modern
but
medicine is quite a thing.
indeed. But Caleb Joseph in his stead has thus far been more than enough.
Which is one of the greatest stories, and one of our new moderators, G. Cathra, wrote about Caleb on CamdenChat.com today, and just, man, what a story! Just that he even made the major leagues at all is pretty incredible. Because of course Caleb Joseph had a long journey through the minors,
Indeed.
and he never really looked like he was going to get a shot in the big leagues. And then suddenly there was Matt Wieters getting hurt, and he got the call, and he stuck around. Because he was throwing out everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
That's
you
an
know.
exaggeration. He actually threw out 40% of runners last year. But the league average is like 26%, so he was above average at throwing out runners. And he's very good at that. And
It's just
get
like
into the pitch framing metrics, and he was one of the best in all of baseball last year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think he was top 10 last year, I think. And I was looking at it before we started, and I think he's the second best so far this year. If you wanna sort of, it depends how much you really wanna put into those stats, but he was the 11th best last year.
Which is not bad for a guy who didn't even play the whole season at the big league level.
Yeah, and that was with a lot less chances than most of the other guys in the top 10.
He caught 672 and two-thirds innings last year, which is a little bit more than half of a season worth that a more regular catcher would get.
And actually, in the past, Wieters has rated decently at those numbers, but the last couple of years he's rated poorly, so take it as what you will. I think it seems to me like they have worked on it with all their catchers, because LeVarnway appears to be pretty decent at it, and I know they had talked about it during the broadcast that catchers are working with John Russell about sort of receiving the ball, as Palmer likes to say.
Presenting a good target, as Dempsey would say.
Yeah, I mean, any little advantage you can get, even if it's as big as some people think or as small as some people think.
Yeah, if they get
But,
it when they weren't getting it before, that makes them better.
yeah, Caleb Joseph's looked pretty good. He's looked good at the plate. He still has a good approach, He's walking 11% of the time so far this year.
Three walks and 27 plate appearances. He's actually got the third most walks, fourth most walks on the Orioles right now.
And so he looks pretty good, and I think his swing's looking pretty good. That hit where he knocked in Davis last night, that was a it was a fastball in the inner third of the plate that he sort of inside outed into center field. He didn't really hit it super hard, but that's not a that's a major league hitter hitting that pitch into center field. It's hard to Not a lot of guys can get around on an inside fastball like that.
Joseph got in on the triples. There's one baseball Twitter person, Lana Berry. I might have said her name wrong. Says it's the year of the triple, and even Caleb's in on it. Although I don't know that there will be much contributing to of that from the Orioles, who I believe
Well,
had
Diaz
the
had a
fewest
triple too.
triples of any team last year.
Wouldn't surprise me. But Diaz had a triple.
Yep, they've got two so far.
I thought the other night that Delman might get one.
Alas, he did not.
No, he didn't. It's too bad. Although he's got some wheels.
I was surprised by his speed when I was at Tuesday night's game. He was motoring faster than I expected.
Underrated speed. I remember, I think it was Britt Jaroli tweeted in the off season. He was the fastest Ori on the 10-yard dash, which has got to be like the weirdest foot race I've ever heard of.
I guess
Ten
once you
yard
get
dash.
that mass moving, it just keeps going.
Yeah, but a 10-yard dash seems like a weird way to measure speed. I guess if for an outfielder maybe, but I don't know.
Quote unquote outfielder.
Yeah, I was surprised when he got that start in right field.
Although
But I guess
the Orioles outfielders, other than Jones, have not yet bathed themselves in glory out there.
they have
Of
not,
course,
which I'm kind of surprised about.
we had Diaza with a pretty crucial error on Tuesday.
Yeah.
What we heard previously was an error from Sunday, where Travis Snyder just totally just had like a brain fart out there, and it turned into a 3-run error. They've actually changed that to a double. So
Which is
Chris
dumb to
Tillman's
me.
ERA goes from 3.86 to 7.71 without him even throwing a pitch.
Rough day.
That is a rough day. That was an
On an
off
off
day, and
day,
his
too.
ERA
Yeah.
doubled.
That's bad. But, yeah, I'm kind of surprised because, and I expected more defensively out of both of them, but both Diaz and Snyder, they kind of seem like they have the skill set, but maybe not the execution that some of someone like, even that's one thing Nick Markakis was good at. He may not have had the range, but if he got to a ball, he was going to catch it, and
Right,
he was always
his
gonna.
no errors last year thing was, that wasn't a coincidence.
No, you got to be, that's, you can be called fundamentally sound, but you have to be pretty talented to do that. Just because he doesn't have the foot speed to catch every ball doesn't mean he doesn't have talent. But, it doesn't appear so far that Snyder and Diaz, they don't have the same sort of that fundamental of setting up their bodies in the right way and reading the bat off the ball off the bat to get the right jumps so far. And that could be bad, but we'll see.
Yeah, we gotta hope that turns around. And
Definitely
of course, the
defense
good
is
thing
one of the
is the
things that
small sample size works in your favor for bad stats, even as it drags you down as you look at good stats. So maybe small sample size, they will turn that
definitely.
around. Maybe.
And especially with defense, because, you're going to get maybe one hard, like average to above average ball hit at you that's going to be like hard to catch or anything like that. I mean, even some games you're probably not likely to see a ball that's difficult to catch. We only have 9 games so far of watching the two of them, and maybe their bad stuff is clustered all right now, and we're going to see good stuff going forward.
That's what we can hope for. The Orioles will certainly need a strong defense if they're going to continue to compete.
Most definitely. That's, one of the reasons they've been able to outperform and be better than people thought, and win 96 games last year was a top flight defense.
Yeah. I mean, in a top-flight defense that people didn't even entirely give them credit for, even as they were doing it, because, they won as many gold gloves as they did, and people were like, oh my God, how did Nick Markakis win a gold glove and blah 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 blah. But
Yeah.
I mean
People.
they all were worthy winners
Yeah.
last year.
People love to get mad.
People
So.
do love to get mad. That's sage words, Alex. I'll give you that one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So. They can, especially, just Hall of Fame time. I just like to turn Twitter off and throw my phone away as far as I can.
I'm gonna get mad if Mike Mussina doesn't get in the Hall of Fame. I'll be the guy getting mad as that drags along. I'll just say
Yeah.
that right there.
Stuff about it will make me mad too, but there's a lot of hand-wringing over a lot of stuff that at the end of the day doesn't affect anything.
No, like no nobody would have really been hurt if Jack Morris had gotten into the Hall of Fame.
No. And no one was hurt when Nick Markakis got a gold glove last year,
Yeah.
but you would think it hurt a lot of people.
Apparently it did, and my response to them is not broadcastable on this family podcast.
Try.
So we're getting close
Yeah.
to when our time winds down, but one thing we wanted to kind of run through is how the Orioles competition has done so far in the first 9 games. And of course, the Orioles are now in third place in the American League East. We've had the Rays have beaten the Blue Jays just in the time we were recording this podcast. That score went final, so they're 1 game behind the Red Sox, a half game behind the Rays, half a game ahead of the Blue Jays, 2 games ahead of the Yankees with their 5-4 record. And the Red Sox are leading the division, but two of their first 3 series were against the National League East, and that division this year, I think, is going to be really bad.
Yeah,
Like,
save for the Nationals, I don't think it's going to be very good.
what? Because what was it last year? The Nationals were the only above 500 team in that division.
Yeah.
The Phillies are going to be possibly historically bad.
Yeah.
I
Miami
think
has looked
the
worse than a lot of people
Braves are
thought.
going to not be so great.
No.
The Marlins are cheap and are already 3-7, and even though they have Stanton, he can only do so much on his own.
Yeah, and they've in a lot of their pickups from the offseason, a lot of people thought Miami might be good, but they've looked pretty bad. And really, other than the Nats right now, the Mets, and I don't know much about the Mets, but not sure how special they're going to be this year.
I am not sure either. I imagine they're 7-3 so far, so good for them, but just I mean, they're the Mets for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Maybe this will be their year. Orioles fans
Maybe.
can certainly relate to when you just suddenly flip that switch. I
True.
always think about it, Alex, when we were going through all those dark years, I just imagined this gradual ascent. And all I
Yeah.
really wanted was for the gradual ascent to begin 1 year. And it never really did. And then all of a sudden, it went from 69 wins to 93 wins.
Yeah, you always invite, like, I always thought, we'll get like the 79, then we'll get the 83, and then we'll the 86, and then we'll be good.
Yeah, like I was exactly. I was thinking it would go, okay, we'll get like 75 and then like 81 and no, we'll just be good out of nowhere.
Just start winning 90 games, like it ain't no thing.
It's okay with me. I hope they can have another 90-win season or more in them this year. But the Red Sox rotation has been really bad so far.
Yes.
So we can hope that continues. The Orioles will see every starter other than I even looked before we started, but I've
Wade
already.
Miley.
Other than Wade Miley, they will see all of the other 4 Red Sox
Which I was
starters.
kind of looking forward to them because Wade Miley, lefty, is pretty bad against righties, and Orioles got some righties in their lineup that kill lefties, but
Sure do.
what are you going to do? We'll see him next time.
The Red Sox rotation through 9 games has I have the wrong tab on FanGraphs. Here's your live podcasting problems here. Now, they have a 6.16 ERA through 9 games, which is,
Yeah.
well, again, small sample size, but I have a feeling that will continue being a shaky unit unless it's overhauled as the
And
season goes along.
they're trusting, Buck Clay Buchholz, Justin Masterson to be, two-fifths of their rotation and to produce at a high level for them. And neither of those guys have produced at a high level in a couple of years. Rick Porcello's got some good underlying numbers, but last year was his best year ever, so
They bet really big on Porcello
they
continuing to
did.
do that, and I mean, good for them if that works out, but I don't know that I would be as confident as they are.
Yeah, they gave him a lot of money. And they got, who, I guess, Wade Miley, who has had a decent career out in Arizona, but they spent a lot of money on their position players, and they kind of are rolling the dice with some guys they might think will be okay in the rotation. It was kind of interesting to me. I kind of thought it was sort of an Orioles strategy of having 5 number 4 starters, or whatever people say, or just 5 above average guys rather than an ace. But I don't really think many of their guys are even above average.
Yeah, it could be that could be a rough situation for them. Of course, they have the prospect hype train waiting to come along. What is
Oh,
that dude?
yeah.
Henry Owens is the one guy getting hype, and
Blake Swihart.
of course, former just dealing with starting pitchers. You got former Orioles prospect Eduardo Rodriguez, who got traded for Andrew Miller.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who else they have that's in their little
As soon as he
stable.
put on that Red Sox uniform, Eduardo Rodriguez went from a 3-4 starter to a potential
It's
ace.
funny how that works out, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah. Well, it's. I think when I'm. One of the things I enjoy about baseball analysis is its ability to cut through narratives, but the human mind is too simple and will create its own narratives anyways. So, you just get, oh, the Rays acquired this guy, he must be good for some reason. The Red Sox acquired this guy, he must be better than we all thought, kind of thing. And so that happens, and you just got to deal with it.
Alex, you never got to meet Andrew Gibson, but I can hear his voice coming to me from the past. You can't give in to the narrative, Mark. He would always say that. You can't give in to the narrative. That's narrative, Mark. And it's true. My mind is simple, and I go for the narrative. I try and be enlightened sometimes, and I know that life does not go in neat, point A to point B, and it all wraps up in a bow and makes sense. And sometimes things go in defiance of the narrative.
Yes.
Like you said, I mean, it is our simple minds trying to make sense of things, and often the narrative is the simplest explanation.
We can blast away that pitcher wins matter for people, but there's just going to be newer ones that people latch on to that aren't true either, but it's just what people do.
It's what happens. The Red Sox don't even have the only bad rotation in the AL East so far. The Yankees are in a bit of trouble with their rotation also. At least through 9 games, they had a 5.07 ERA. And of course, there's a big question mark. Is Tanaka fully healthy? Because his velocity was not all the way there. And I think there was something about he couldn't do his curveball as well or something.
Yeah. I mean his swinging strikes and his strikeouts just like have fallen off the table early off in the season, and like we were talking about earlier, that's something bad to see early on. And people are concerned that it's not having surgery on that elbow means that he's not actually fully healthy. And if he's not actually fully healthy, then he's not the ace that the Yankees need desperately.
Yeah, because CC Sabathia of the past ain't walking through that door for them.
No. And I actually thought he looked decent against the Orioles, but he still is not. He's not what he used to be in any way. I was going to say shape or form, but he's kind of the same shape and form.
Oh, that's a little cruel, but that's okay. I mean, well, didn't he lose some weight, and that was part of the thing, was people were like, oh, well, he won't be
Yeah.
able to have the same velocity.
Yeah, he lost weight and he injured his knee, and then he gained all the weight back
Oh,
over
see, I
less
didn't
than this
realize he'd
offseason.
gained it all back.
So he's back to being big, and that was supposed to help him out, but I don't know. We'll see. He's throwing 89 now, not 93.
It's definitely
On a day with
a
big
smaller
knees.
margin for error when you're throwing that.
Yeah, I mean that was the game. He tried to sneak that. I think he tried to sneak the fastball into Jones, and when it's 89, harder to sneak it inside. That's the one Jones put in the left field seats.
Yeah, you can't sneak 89.
No.
Not against Adam Jones, anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing with the Yankees, everyone's just so old that, injuries and breaking down just seems like something that should happen to them, but I've been saying that for
I
years.
have also been saying that for years, and it never really happened.
No.
The Orioles don't play a non-AL East opponent until April the 27th.
Yeah, it's the White Sox, right?
It is
Yeah.
the White Sox as their first
I guess,
non-Eastern opponent.
Yeah.
It's really they only play 5 non-AL East opponents until May the 15th. 5 games against non-AL East opponents until May the 15th.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule right now. That's pretty crazy.
So I mean, it's only April, quote unquote, but these are that's a good chunk of their division games
Yeah.
getting out of the way early.
Yeah. I
So
mean,
I
a
mean,
lot.
a month from now, we'll have a pretty good idea where things are shaping up
Definitely.
to look like.
I mean, last year they were, whatever, 500 in April and May, but with so many games against the division, just going 500 and hope you turn it on later might not be the best thing to do when you're not going to have many games left against the rest of the division
Right.
after May 15th.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And hopefully the Orioles don't need to turn it on in June, and then they won't have their division games left to do it in.
True.
We'll see
Although
how
I'm
it
sure
goes.
September is all division games and the preseason.
I think it's that again. It's like they clear out in the middle of the year and then they're back to all division the rest of the way.
They always do that in September, I feel like, at least.
Let's see. September and October.
Oh, they got three
So
against the
basically,
Nats.
starting August the 31st, other than a three against the Royals and three against the Nats, it's the AL East the rest of the way through October the 4th. So again, so you're starting off with your division and you're ending with your division, and that's your season. The rest matters too, but the division stuff especially matters because you want to win the division, especially in the new way. You don't want to be in the one game.
No.
I mean, of course the Orioles won it in 2012 and that was cool, but anything can happen in one game.
I like the one game playoffs. I think they're like an exciting baseball game to watch. They might be stupid, but I think they're exciting, but not if the Orioles are in one.
Yeah.
It's just too nerve-wracking.
No. No, I wouldn't want to see that. I mean, I'd rather see them in there than not.
Yeah.
But I would prefer to avoid that. I mean, honestly, with the AL East looking the way it is so far, it certainly still seems to be a wide open division. And the Orioles, if they can get some stuff together and do it all the way they did last year, why the heck not?
Yeah, it's true. No one's thus far seemed like they're clearly head and shoulders above anyone else.
So, what are you going to be looking for this weekend? Somebody to show you something, Alex, or whatever.
Well, like we were talking about, since they're missing Wade Miley, it's going to be four righties going for the Red Sox. So I'd like to see Chris Davis do some stuff and cut down on the strikeouts.
Do some stuff that's not continuing to strike out like crazy,
Yes,
hopefully.
yes. That would be nice. Draw a couple walks, hit a couple opposite field fly balls at the very least, if not a bunch of home runs. And sort of go from there, because I think this is a good opportunity for him to get healthy, so to speak.
What was it last year? JJ Hardy was the guy who went forever without walking, wasn't it? And now we've got Davis doing that.
Yeah. And Hardy went forever without hitting the homer, too.
Oh, that was what it was. Jones went forever without walking 2 years ago, I think, because I swear
Yeah.
it was like May before Jones walked in one of these
Yeah,
recent
which
years.
I think Scope took a while maybe last year.
At least he's not doing it this year. He's got one lone walk, but that's better than zero.
Is. It is. So I think that, and I'd love to just see the rotation sort of settle down even more. All of them, as you know, need to work on that fastball command. That's what they've all sort of been struggling with. You could say that about almost the entire pitching staff, basically. So you'd like to see that sort of settle down. I know the Red Sox are going to be a tough lineup, tough matchup, but you got to play them 19 times.
I am definitely going to be looking to see how Ubaldo does, and I mean it. I guess it won't mean anything still, even if he does well, because there'll only be two games. But if he has two good games against two tough AL East lineups, I'll be feeling pretty good about him. I
Agreed.
have a feeling I'm going to be let down, but of course, as anyone listening to this knows, that natural streak of pessimism is hard for me to do something about. But I mean. And here I'm going to venture into unfamiliar ground of sounding vaguely confident, but if you look at the matchups of Chris Tillman versus Clay Buchholz, Wei-Yin Chen versus Porcello, maybe a bit of a push, but and then Miguel Gonzalez and Justin Masterson, that's your Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I mean, that's pretty much two out of three of those should be in favor of the Orioles, and Chen and Porcello is maybe a wash, but.
I'd like to see him go into Boston and at least win two.
It would be good if they could at least split. And they certainly should.
Yeah, I think they should go in and split. A series win would be great.
Yep, if they can pull a three, that would
I
be
think it's
pretty good.
I don't know about you, but I hate 4-game series for some reason.
The three-game
Just
series just feels most natural because you can't have a tie.
yeah.
Like, what do you do? Oh, you went 2-2. That's great. You split the series. Whatever.
Yeah. It feels like with a 4-game series, like the most likely outcome is a split, and that just feels bad. And it feels like winning one is just too hard, because beating a team 3 out of 4 times is a hard thing to do in the Major League Baseball. And
It's grasping for that narrative again, because if you have a
true.
three-game series, if you split the first two, the third game is decisive. One team won the series, one team lost the series. Boom. Nice and clean.
Yeah.
Nice and easy.
Yeah, but that. So we'll see. But
Two-game
then, they
series are
go.
even weirder than four-game series.
Yeah, I hate those too. Because again, it's something like you can't. It's like a cheap sweep if you get it, and you can't really win the series. Because it's either. It's just. Just make them all 3 games. Come on.
Yeah, I don't know how possible that is to do, but I would be in favor of that. Just in trying to make sense of it all. But anyway, we're about out of our time for this evening. So thank you all for listening to us again. And please be sure you can always check out CamdenChat.com through the day every day for interesting Orioles thoughts of all different kinds. Sometimes it's Alex and I, sometimes it's our other fellow writers, but we all love the Orioles and we're all writing about them. And there's always something every day. So make sure to check us out. You can follow us on Twitter at CamdenChat, Facebook.com/CamdenChat. You can even go on Instagram. I added some pictures over the last week. It's Instagram.com/CamdenChat. I don't get to the stadium as often as I would like, but I will be trying to share some pictures whenever I'm there. And they will be my pictures with no filters because I am old and I don't like filters, so. You can look for me on there. You can follow Alex on Twitter. He's at Alex Conway CC. And
Yep.
you can follow my personal Twitter if you want, which is now that I am running the Camden Chat Twitter, it's mostly nerdy and non-Orioles observations. But I am at EatmoreSK as I have always been. And that's where you can find us, so hopefully you will. But that's all the time we have for tonight. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We are bringing you CamdenCast. This is Birdland, and we are out.